Be a baller. Welcome to Be a Baller, where we discuss how to build a lifelong legacy. I'm your host, Coach Tim Brown. Today, we'll be talking about building a legacy in business with John Pace, founder of Classic for Columbus.
Before we get started, let's hear a word from our sponsor.
Are you ready for a real HBCU experience? You ready to see the funkiest halftime show with the band? Are you ready to stroll in the arena? Are you ready to see the best HBCU basketball players in the country? And are you ready to see Ron Isley and the Isley brothers? If not, you better get ready. The Classic for Columbus basketball game is back Saturday, April 22nd at the Scheidenstein Center. It's the HBCU experience of a lifetime. Bring the entire family for a day full of events, basketball and entertainment. The best HBCU basketball players go head-to-head against the Ohio College All-Stars. But it's not just a basketball game. It's a real HBCU party. At halftime, you don't want to miss Wilberforce Band with the funk master, Bootsy Collins. And after the game, live on stage, it's the Isley Brothers. Saturday, April 22nd at the Scheidenstein Arena. Get your tickets and check out all the events now at ClassicForColumbus.com. To Live, Lachey's, B&K Smokehouse, or call 614-944-8700. Presented by Nationwide, Honeysett, Franklin County Commissioners, and City of Columbus.
Today on the show, John will share his insight on building positive business relationships to create positive events that benefit the community and also support students in college. John, welcome to Be a Baller podcast.
It's my honor to be here, Coach Brown.
Yeah, I was going through your resume. Man, you've been quite the entrepreneur. Boy, that spirit hit you young. You know, growing up, what inspired you to be an entrepreneur?
It was almost in me, I believe. And it started back when I was 10 years old. I was a call and post boy. And, you know, back in those days, you took the call and post on Thursday and you knocked on doors and you asked whomever answered to buy a paper. And I thought there has to be a better way. And so I created my own subscription. Didn't realize that's what I was doing at the time. But what I would tell people is, look, just pay me a dollar for the month and I'll drop your paper off. Well, I later learned there were papers like the Dispatch and other larger papers who had been doing that. But I didn't know about that at the time. I just created it. So certain things, I think, were just born in me. God gave them to me.
That's good. Can you talk about some of the teachers in your life that saw and encouraged you to be a leader and help you develop your leadership skills?
Absolutely. I think that for me, many of the teachers who impressed me and impressed upon me were not licensed teachers per se, but that was the space they filled in life, beginning back with my surrogate grandmother. So I grew up on the east side here in Columbus at a time where what had been a middle-class neighborhood was transitioning. And my parents refused to leave, although many of the neighbors were leaving for the suburbs. My parents refused to leave. They thought that God had placed them there for a mission. And so one of the ladies they took in to come and live with us was a lady who was born in 1880. Mm-hmm. Her name was Grandmother Fisher. That's what we called her, Coach. We called her Grandma Fisher. Her name was Marie Fisher, and she had been born in Topeka, Kansas. Her father was Irish. He had come over to escape the potato famine in Ireland and fell in love with a slave who was a Native American, a Blackfoot Native American who had been a freed slave. They got married and they had Marie Fisher. So that was her story. And she was born in 1880. And she shared so much history and culture with me. She prepared me for what we now call diversity, equity, and inclusion. Because she was mixed. And so she gave me all of that and she gave me history and she taught me to read before I ever started to school. But I think the most impactful thing she did for me was she convinced me of my value. She convinced me that I was somebody, that God had put me here for a purpose, and that purpose was special.
Wow, that's a great story. That's a great story. You know, when you were in high school, being the young entrepreneur you were, what kind of deals were you running and what were you doing in high school?
Oh, I did all kinds of deals in high school. You know, we played football. And so I was able to organize a group of young ladies and they would take uniforms for a low fee and wash them.
All right.
And so we were able to create, organize a washing service, if you will, a dry cleaning service. Mm. That was probably the biggest business that I operated when I was in high school, but there were a number of others. We wholesaled. When I was in high school back in the 70s, everyone had a Jerry Curl, and it was relatively new. And so I had cut a deal, I had cut a deal with some of the distributors here, and I had the products. And so I got them wholesale, and I made a considerable amount of money selling Jerry Curl juice and spray and the like.
I'm kind of chuckling because I probably brought some of yours. I probably had a little spray back in the day.
Yes.
You know, at 18 years old, you planned and implemented a marketing strategy. What was the vision behind that?
So at that time, I wasn't a born-again Christian yet. I'd been raised in the church, and so I knew of God, and I knew the Word. At least I knew the words, right? But I wasn't a born-again Christian yet. But I would say in retrospect, Coach, that was probably my first divine experience. And so very interesting story. I don't know how I got the idea around 1980, but it came to me that there were only a few music awards programs. Now, you young people, today, there are a number of music awards programs. But back in the 1980s, there were only three. There were the Country Music Awards, the American Music Awards, and the Grammys. Mm. Only three. And there were a number of artists selling millions of records, platinum, or hundreds of thousands of records, gold, that were not being recognized. There just wasn't enough bandwidth at these music awards to recognize them. So somehow I got the idea that I was going to create a music awards. And my vision wasn't to create it for the whole country yet. We did the Midwest Music Awards, and this is back in the early 80s. And so we took five states. We took Indiana, Illinois, Michigan, Minnesota, and Pennsylvania. I decided that Pennsylvania was no longer going to be East. It was going to be Midwest for my purposes.
Right.
And so we did the Midwest Music Awards at a time where those five states were rich in talent. Prince, Madonna, Survivor, Michael Jackson, on and on and on. And so I wrote a letter. I couldn't type at the time. I wrote a letter, and my sister, God bless her heart, my sister typed it up for me, and we put it in the mailbox. And so we sent letters to all of the big artists. Even in Ohio, there were big R&B artists like Slave was at the top of their success. Roger Troutman and Sapp, the Ohio Players, Heat Wave, Dayton. The list went on and on and on, just very rich in talent. And so we sent them all letters, and guess what, Coach? They came at their own expense.
Oh, wow.
And even record companies, because we sent letters to Warner Brothers and CBS and the like, Elektra Records. And those artists who didn't come in on their own, their record companies paid for them to come to the event. Mm. And so my first event I did with a $60 budget. We had paper flyers that were really just typed up and ran off on a Ditto machine. We had a $60 budget, but when the event came, there were no less than 10 or 12 limos outside this place where we had it at the Rich Street Club. And all the artists came and had a great time. And so two or three years later, I can't remember, it was before my 21st birthday, they joked I wasn't even old enough to drink yet. Anheuser-Busch purchased the rights to it, and it became part of the Michelob brand launch when they were just launching that brand Michelob. And so that was my entree. that was really the pivotal point where I really started to become a professional promoter, where before I had done small parties on the nights where clubs were closed or had slow business. And it wasn't really done professional, but that was the turning point where I really started to think and act and activate like a professional.
It's a great story. It's a great story. You know, as you began your entrepreneurship journey, who were some of your mentors and lessons you learned from them?
You know, I don't know if it was my personality or what the set of circumstances were, but I didn't have a lot of mentors, but the ones I had were very impactful. I think of Gene D'Angelo. And so Gene D'Angelo, back in the 70s and 80s and 90s, was one of the most influential businessmen in Columbus, Ohio, if not the entire state of Ohio or in the Midwest. Gene carried the proxy of the Wolf family. And so Gene was the president and CEO of the Dispatch, WBNS Radio, Channel 10 TV, and the station they owned, the NBC station they owned in Indianapolis, Indiana. And so Gene, because anyone in broadcasting, as you know, carries a lot of power and a lot of weight, and because the Wolf family was arguably the most influential power in Columbus, Gene carried their proxy. And Gene taught me so much, things that are little but big. For example, Gene asked me for a proposal one time. I was at the King Arts Complex. I was the development director at the King Arts Complex. And Gene was helping me raise money. And so he asked me for a proposal. And so I sat down and set about creating this wonderful proposal. And when it was all said and done, it was 15 pages long and footnotes and bibliography. I proudly sent that over to Gene, and he asked me to come into his office a couple of days later. And I came into Gene's office expecting all kind of accolades and praise. And Gene sat me down and he said, "Dude," and that's what he said. You know, dude is not as new a word as we might think, but he said, "Dude," he said, "John Pace," he said, "if I ask you for a proposal," he said, "I'm a busy man." He said, "if you can't get it down in one page," he said, "then you haven't thought it through clearly enough." He said, "give busy executives your thoughts in one page." And so even to this day, I might do some long proposals, but there's always a one-page summary that pulls out the important thoughts and the ask and the value proposition.
Wow. As you think about this, and I know you've been a young entrepreneur, what role did your faith keep you going, keep you encouraged during this time, during that time of getting started?
Well, interesting. So I say that the Spirit was on me, but it wasn't in me. And so from time to time, I would feel the Spirit, but it wasn't inside me. So it really had no influence on my thoughts, my behavior, and my deeds. But because it was on me, I had protection from the enemy who should have, could have, and would have destroyed me. So there was a turning point in my life when I turned 50 where the Spirit was not only on me, but it was in me. And that was a life-changing experience for me. But early on, the Spirit was on me. And so I believe that that anointing impacted a lot of what I did. In a supernatural way. It wasn't my decision, but in a supernatural way, the Spirit that was on me led me down certain paths, led me away from danger from time to time, and really allowed me to survive until the Spirit was in me.
It's something how patient God is with us, you know, how patient he's with us, you know. He lets us do whatever. Then at some point he says, "Hey, that's enough. Come on, son.
Yes.
Come on, son. I've given you this gift. Now I want you to use this." And, you know, once you use that gift for his glory, it's a whole different ballgame.
I'm so excited
that. And also, I know some seeds was planted in you.
Early
some seeds
on.
Were definitely planted.
So my father, his vocation was a CPA, but his advocation was the ministry. And so when I was a little tot, my dad was a deacon in the Holiness Church. By the time I became an adolescent, he was a minister. And then by the time I became an adult, he was a pastor. And later on, he became a bishop, retired early from the Ohio State University, where he was one of the first directors of color there back in the 60s. He retired early and went into the ministry full time. And so, of course, I went to church. If church gets you into heaven, I'm there despite the rest of my deeds. But we all know that's not the case. But I spent hours in church for the first 15 years of my life. My routine was on Tuesdays, we had Bible class. On Wednesdays, we had a prayer meeting. Every other Thursday, one of the auxiliaries in the church had a service. On Friday, it was Young People's Willing Workers. On Saturday, it was the pastor's auxiliary that had and then all day on Sunday, beginning at 9 o'clock what do they call it? Not Bible study, but we had a service where we studied the Bible from 9 o'clock.
Sunday school.
Sunday school. Yes, we had Sunday school from 9 o'clock until 10:30. Morning service from 11 o'clock until 2:30. Sometimes 4 o'clock if someone was tearing for the Holy Ghost. It would go until 4 o'clock. Then we had evening service at 4 o'clock and night service at 8 o'clock. Right. So that was my life. That was my routine. So I do know. I've always known the words, but now I know the word.
Amen. It's great.
Hey there, Clark Kellogg here. Building a legacy usually involves meeting the unique needs of others and being part of something bigger than yourself. That's why I love First Merchants Bank. First Merchants believes that helping communities prosper means more than just providing banking services. It means offering accessible financial education, expanded access to home ownership, and partnerships with local nonprofits to help raise up neighborhoods and lift families out of financial hardship. For resources and tools available to you, visit www.firstmerchants.com. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
When you hear that word, this is a legacy podcast about building a legacy. When you hear the word legacy, what does that mean to John? What does that mean to you?
I always think about when I'm no longer here, what are people going to think when they hear my name? So what's the first thought when you hear John Pace? And that's the legacy. To me, that's the legacy. What people are going to think when they hear your name and you're no longer here.
So I'm hearing your name, John Pace. What are people thinking?
Well, I think many people think he's an intense guy, right? He's very intense. He's all about business. I hope they believe I'm fair, right? So I don't mind people thinking that I'm tough as long as they know that I'm fair. I think if nothing else, I want people to feel like he's fair and honest.
That's good. Fair and honest. That's all we can ask. That's all we can ask. You know, as you think about these young entrepreneurs that are coming down the pipe here, what advice would you give them to be a successful entrepreneur?
Get in touch with your faith. Get in touch with your faith. I think of the wasted time because of my faith being too little, if you will, too little. And so the first thing is get in touch with your faith. The second thing is be mindful of your lifestyle. Too much of anything is not good for you. Too much of some things is a killer. And so that's the second thing I would say is be mindful of your lifestyle. The third thing I would say is prepare yourself for success. If you do the first two things, if you get in touch with your faith, if you're mindful of your lifestyle, you are gifted. And so success is inevitable. But what I've learned is that success kills more people than failure. And so early on, start preparing yourself for success. And so how do we do that? We start envisioning ourselves in a successful position. We start envisioning people coming to us telling us how great we are when you know you're not that great. Mm-hmm. When people trying to convince you that you are things that you know you are not, at least not yet. Envision yourself with material things. Envision yourself with enough means to make good or bad, right or wrong decisions. Envision yourself with enough influence to destroy people who don't deserve to be destroyed, but you might have that temptation to destroy them just because you want their space or their place. And so envision yourself as a successful person, and that way you start to already have a plan for how you're going to navigate and negotiate through some of these tough times when our human side, and trust me, it's going to happen when your human side comes a calling and says, it's okay to do this, even though you know it's wrong.
Wow, that's a great word. That's a great word. You know, I know education is important to you. Can you talk about the events you created to help benefit HBCU schools and student scholarships?
I've always believed this, and I believe my surrogate grandmother, Grandma Fisher, instilled this in me at an early age and made a believer out of me that education is the pathway to upward mobility. Mm. So, yes, we need opportunity, and sometimes opportunity only comes with protest and civil disobedience sometimes. But the bottom line is education is the pathway. And so when all the protesting is done and we're in this era of diversity, equity, and inclusion, right, which creates opportunity. But if the opportunity is there and you are not prepared, my belief, and I'm an employer. So my belief is that opportunity without preparation leads to termination. Mm. And so if you don't want to be terminated, educate yourself and prepare yourself. The pathway to upward mobility is education.
Well, I'm really appreciating this real talk, because you've been really real on this one. You know, as we think about this, I know you have a commitment to empowering the next generation of leaders in marketing and event planning. What is your vision of helping young people experience planning an event from the ground up?
I've been working with some of the leaders in our board of trustees, and we have created the Classic for Columbus Academy. The academy will be 100 hours of training, 40 hours in the classroom, 60 hours real life experience working in an apprenticeship supervised. Mm. And so the academy will leverage the events that Classic for Columbus does to provide high school students with a real-life educational experience in the areas of major event planning, sports and entertainment marketing, and hospitality. And so we're going to provide, yes, we're going to provide the traditional education that will go across all disciplines and provide those transferable skills. But we're also going to dive into some areas, Coach, that you can only dive into if you swim in deep waters. Mm. For example, when crisis comes, and if you are running a business, particularly in major event management and hospitality, you can count on crisis coming to visit you. And when a crisis comes, the first thing that happens is you have a physiological reaction. I can remember in 2001, my then wife and I had invested over $1 million on a football classic in Cincinnati at the new Cleveland, at the new Cincinnati Bengals Stadium. And the event started on that Monday, September 10th, 2001. And we had already sold like 30 or 40,000 tickets, 35,000 tickets, even though the event was still a week away that weekend. And so people started coming into town on that Monday, September 10th, and it was such a festive attitude. The hotels have already started to fill up. And then the next day, that Tuesday morning, the planes hit the tower. And with that hit, my wife and I, then wife and I, took a hit of about $1 million. So we lost $1 million. And we had to announce to our volunteers and board members and to the community the event wasn't going to happen. And so when you get the news that you've lost $1 million, your body has a physical reaction to it, right? But yet, I still had a company to run. I had to make announcements. I had arrangements to make. We had to refund tickets. We had to negotiate with sponsors. We had to negotiate with folk who we owed money to. So I couldn't afford to be nervous, what I call paralysis, right? Analysis paralysis. I could not afford to go into a state of analysis paralysis. I had to think my way out and react. So one of the courses we're going to teach is how do you manage your body in a crisis? Because if you cannot manage your physiological reaction to crisis, you'll never be able to think your way out of it. So we're going to give some processes and some methods for managing your physiological reaction to crisis, and then we'll teach you how to think your way out of it with a repeatable process.
That's powerful. Sounds like you have hit on something there with that mental space, you know, just dealing with the mental space of that. Also, as you were talking, I was thinking about, that sounds like John Pace's legacy there, you know, something he's going to, you know, sharing that wisdom with this next generation, you know, something that they can take and run with it, you know, and then they can pass that on to the next generation, you know. Sound like legacy talk
to me. Absolutely.
You know, sound like you're talking some baller talk now.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Well, I'm an old guy, but I have a 20-year-old daughter, right? Who I had when I was 42.
All
and
right.
My daughter often reminds me that I was born in the middle of the last century. So.
Right. But you're all right.
She may think I'm living my legacy now.
Last, as we wrap up, this has been wonderful. I've really been blessed by this, and I'm sure the audience has just learning not only about you, but about just about business and those opportunities that can come their way. Can you lastly talk about your business? I heard you talk a lot about your business philosophy. I win when my organization wins. What does that mean to you? I win when my organization wins.
Sure. I've been around businessmen and women who have a lot of varying philosophies. And one thing I'll ask someone who owns a business, who gets paid first, right? And half of the people answer, oh, I always pay myself first. But I'm looking for that entrepreneur, that business owner who has the philosophy that I get paid last, right? My team gets paid first. My community gets paid second. And then I have some philanthropic commitments that get paid third. I get paid last. And so that's really my philosophy. When I say I win when my team wins, it's that philosophy of I get paid last, right? I'm going to pay off everybody else first, and then I'm going to take what's left. And that's really the philosophy that I've tried to operate my business with then and now.
Wow. That's great. Well, John, I want to thank you for being a part of our podcast today. And thank you for sharing your many years of experience in business, but most importantly, your heart for education and your heart for the next generation, equipping that next generation. So I want to thank you for that. So thank you all for joining us doing this enlightening and informative discussion on building a legacy in business. I hope this episode was beneficial to you all. And as always, thanks for listening to Be a Baller podcast. Thanks, John.
Thank you.
If you enjoy our show, please share this podcast with your family and friends. Be a Baller podcast is available on all major podcast stations. Be sure to come back next week as we continue to discuss on how to build a lifelong legacy. Until then, don't forget to be a baller. This podcast was created by Coach Tim Brown. It was edited by Teron Howell and produced and recorded by the video production class of Worthington Christian High School.